Alrighty, welcome to the Celtics Lab podcast brought to you by Prize Picks, the exclusive fantasy basketball partner of the CLNS Media Network. If you enjoyed this podcast, check out the How About Them Celtics podcast, First to the Floor, and the many other New England sports podcasts available on the CLNS Media Network. I'm Cameron Tubbatabai. I've got a mouthful of marbles, joined by Alex Goldberg and Dr. Justin Quinn. I'm probably slurring my words because I'm so eager to talk about today's topic. We are going to look at, in the lab portion of the programming, the NCAA tournament. Am I allowed to say March Madness, or will I get sued?
You have fair use rights in this particular instance. We're not marketing.
Well, you know, in this litigious country of ours. We're going to talk about March Madness from a Celtics bend, but really a UConn Huskies bend, because Dr. Justin Quinn is going to walk us through that. Before we talk about college hoops, we'll talk about pro hoops, we'll talk about what's going on with the Celtics. And before that, I will ask Alex and Justin how they're doing. Alex, how are you doing?
Can't complain. It is finally starting to get nice here in Brooklyn, New York. The weather is starting to turn a little bit. The Brooklyn Nets are not starting to turn a little bit. That's your occasional Nets update from me. Boy, is that a bad basketball team. But basketball in New York is fun in large part because Jalen Brunson is kicking ass. Yeah, that's really all I got.
Dr. Quinn.
Well, you can see me, so things are definitely going better than the last pod. As viewers of the pod, you couldn't ever hear me on the audio version, but on the video version, I disappeared very promptly after some technical snafus derailed my presence. Hopefully, this new webcam, thank you, Amit, is making this better.
You look beautiful.
Thank you. I think
this is since. This is sincerely the most high-def look at your face I've ever gotten. All right. What a thrill. Let's do this. Let's talk about the news, and then later we'll talk about the college kids. But first, I guess this is the headline of the news. So I got to put a timestamp here. It's Monday evening, right before the Celtics face the Pistons at home. Sam Hauser is out after turning his ankle, after going nuclear in Washington. According to Adam Himmelsbeck at the Boston Globe, he avoided a serious X-ray. I mean, he avoided a serious
injury. It turned out to be a non-serious X-ray, so you're not wrong.
Sure, let's go. He avoided serious injury. He had a negative X-ray. He is out tonight, as are a bunch of people. It does look as if... So I think Hauser is sincerely injured. I think other guys from here on out are going to have recurring injuries that take dedicated care, as in they're gonna start resting guys, because it's a 2-page injury report tonight, and I don't think 2 pages worth of Boston Celtics are sincerely too injured to play basketball, but something to monitor as, you know, the month of March turns to the month of April and the playoffs come into view.
It's nostalgia for those days where we regularly got two sheet injury reports and start the pandemic.
Yeah, but those were real, and this is less real, I think.
Are you saying that they're violating the principles of the NBA's push to have people in the games all the time?
I'm saying I simply don't know how they haven't gotten fined yet. Miraculously, Al Horford's big toe is always injured when they have a back-to-back. And
he was in an all-star, so he gets away with it. I guess it's just national TV games, which this is not. So that's probably how.
Yeah, I mean, Jason Tatum also had some stuff to say about this recently, just in talking about like the opportunity for the Celtics to really start playing with some lineups down the stretch with a huge lead in the Eastern Conference standings. And I think more than anything, the reason you're seeing, like, obviously you want to keep Porzingis and Horford healthy, right? You want to keep Jrue Holiday and Jason Tatum and everybody in top shape heading into the playoffs. But another advantage to this is also just like giving more time for Xavier Tillman and Luke Kornet and Peyton Pritchard and all of them to like get some actual burn before the playoffs, where presumably a handful of those guys are going to have a lot of their minutes cut. So this is kind of their chance, you know, March, April, to really see what you have on those bench units and if any one of those guys can become a reliable playoff option. And Tatum seems pretty aware of that.
I was pretty happy that Anna Horford posted on Twitter a meme being like, I can't tell Xavier Tillman and my brother Al Horford apart because I run into that problem when I watch the game.
Me too.
I think Tillman getting run is probably the main story, Alex, because I can't imagine Springer ends up being a player in the postseason. And, you know, Hauser, Cornett, and Richard are not done getting better, but like we know how they fit around the other players. Tillman is the one who has like real conference championship experience. We just haven't seen him get a lot of run with these guys. So that feels insanely valuable. Like protecting against injury is the number one concern, but they actually have like perhaps an important piece that they need to figure out how he fits in. And they've, I think, slow rolled that process. We still haven't had more than a handful of like quote unquote Xavier Tillman games. So that's an important point. Since we last talked, the Celtics have been rolling bad teams. I think the Suns are a bad team, so I'm going to include them with Utah and the Wizards here. I mean, the Celtics have had stretches where they look bored enough for other teams to hang around, but the outcomes have never been any doubt, and they don't look like they play with their food the way they did last season. So someone tell me I'm wrong here, but I think that there's not that much report from what we've seen lately. This is a team that looks to be pretty polished, pretty ready. And if Joe Mazzulla is ready to swap in the subs and let guys rest, I think that they have probably like achieved the tactical goals that they're like setting up for the postseason. I do want to ask you about some things that are coming up on the calendar. Most importantly, you know, there's two big challenges in the near view. The first, as they face Milwaukee at home on Wednesday. Milwaukee's having a weird season, but it's still Milwaukee, so let's talk about that. And then immediately they launch into a 6-game road stand, the longest of the season for them. So that will be a challenge of some description, I suppose. So, Alex, road stand or Bucks game, which one is a more telling challenge for the Celtics?
I mean, I think you got to go with the Bucks game, right? Because the Bucks, to me, have emerged. I think the Knicks have played a really admirable season, and obviously the Celtics lost to the Cavs the last time that they squared up. To me, the Bucks still feel like if there is a team in the Eastern Conference that can put together a run to topple Boston, the Bucks would be that team just because of the upside with Giannis. I think another thing I'm going to be really interested in is seeing how Chris Middleton looks against elite competition. To your point, the Suns are going through a little bit of a struggle right now. Chris Middleton came back against them last night. He looked pretty decent. He was moving around all right. I don't take the Suns particularly seriously as a basketball team right now. How will Chris Middleton hold up against an actually elite basketball team in the Boston Celtics is definitely something I'm going to be looking to watch. Another thing I'm going to be looking to watch on the Bucks side is that, guys, I don't know if you've noticed, but Bobby Portis has quietly been playing out of his mind for a month now off the bench. And that guy's, there's something about Bobby Portis where when he gets it going, his irrational confidence levels go to places that I don't think many guys can get to. And Pat Beverly egging him on is certainly also making that a more significant thing. Now, the big question with Milwaukee for me is this Giannis injury, which seems to be kind of lingering. I don't really know what exactly the deal is. They seem to be reasonably unconcerned about it long term, you know, or they're putting on a brave face. But there's a lot of different parts to this Bucks team and this Bucks season. They've probably had the most dramatic season of any one team this year. When they put it all together, if they put it all together, they still feel like the only team in the East that could really challenge Boston at the top. And so I'm going to be very closely watching that game.
All right, let's pause the podcast because the action on the hardwood is heating up and you can get in on the excitement with Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. App where you can turn your hoops knowledge into serious cash. So whether it is tournament season or the fight for playoff seeding, there's no shortage of high stakes basketball this time of year, and you can test your skills over on Prize Picks this season with the most exciting daily fantasy sports app around. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $1,000 just a few taps. They offer injury insurance. They offer all sorts of games for daily fantasy sports players and basketball fans alike. That is the number one stop. So download the app today and use the code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. Pick Prize Picks. Okay, back to the podcast.
Fair enough. What about you, Justin?
I mean, I find it kind of hard to be too worried about a team that is closer to 10 games behind the Celtics in the standings than something more reasonable that would make you worried. But Alex is right. They are starting to look better. They are starting to run into form. They're defending better. They're getting healthier, with the exception potentially of Giannis. So I, too, probably fall in roughly, I think they're on par with me for the ghost of the zombie Miami Heat. They aren't quite the same team they were last year, but we were saying the same thing about them about this time last year. So until I'm very, very confident by seeing them ejected before they end up playing Boston in the postseason or such, some similar scenario like that, I am not going to be particularly concerned about either team, really, but I'm definitely not going to dismiss the Heat. This road trip, I think, is going to be, you know, there's a maybe the Hawks might catch the Celtics sleeping. The Pelicans definitely could. But, I mean, pretty much everyone else on that is not exactly a murderer's row. So I think we're going to see a lot of experimentation to what we were talking about earlier. And frankly, that to me is probably the most interesting thing left in the season.
The Pelicans are playing really well lately, for what it's worth. And Zion has typically given Boston some problems in the past. So I wouldn't be super shocked if that ends up being a really hard game.
I was checking my phone because Jaylen Brown and Kristaps Porzingis were upgraded for tonight's game and Jason Tatum was downgraded. And I don't know. I don't know enough information to know, like, who decides these things, because, I don't actually think that, like, Tatum is injured here. But you never know. So I guess the where I would weigh in is, and this is, like, really galaxy brain, so forgive me. There's an element of the postseason that is momentum and confidence based. And if the Bucks thump the Celtics, as we saw earlier this season, Joe Mazzulla can just pull the plug at halftime. He can kind of like neuter the possibility that this is like a demoralizing loss by just waving the flag. The 6-game road stand, which Justin, you alluded to, they're not playing any good teams whatsoever. I mean, they played Atlanta twice, they played Detroit, they played Charlotte on a Monday. On League Pass, that sounds familiar. I suppose it was like the Pins are good, yeah, and it's on the road. And it's a marquee Sunday evening game. Actually, it's on national TV, NBA TV. Like whatever slim chance there is, say they go 3-3 on this, then there's a whole week of the Celtics like unraveling. But before, like there's more of a risk of if it goes sideways, it being problematic. Whereas like if the Bucks game is a dud, it's a dud. So I don't anticipate that happening, but just for the sake of like covering all our bases, I do wonder if like we've been kind of just set in fourth gear all season.
D is what you're trying to say.
Well, just nothing bad has happened all season. Like everything is coming up aces. That just feels impossible. I know. Justin is telling me to not jinx it. But sorry.
I'm not superstitious, I'm just stitious.
Yeah. Boo. You get to say that. You have the prettiest mug of us all. Okay, Justin, you put this on our notes. I actually like this topic. I don't... wow, we're on fire, huh? Jaylen Brown has been pretty damn good lately. You used the word aggressive in our notes, so... Dr. Quinn, while I pull up some stats to back that up, tell us about Jaylen Brown's aggressive play.
There's no hesitation. There's no second guessing. He makes decisions. They're usually good decisions, even in traffic with his handle. Everything that he was critiqued for over the offseason, he has clearly worked on. He finishes with his left regularly. He made I forget what game it was, but over the last 3 or 4 games, he like made almost every play with his left hand, Larry Bird style. Not on that level, obviously, but like I would say more shots than not with his left. Like everything that you could ask the man to work on, he has been. And honestly, since the All-Star break, I don't even think this is even remotely outrageous to say, but I think he has been the Celtics' best player.
No, I don't think you're wrong about that. I mean, in the league since the All-Star break, he's 4th in points per game. He's 4th in plus-minus. Tatum happens to be 2nd. Minus, but you know, here and there, like the other day, the Suns game, Tatum scored 14 points in the first quarter. He was, you know, definitely the engine for the offense. But then it shifted into Jaylen Brown was the more important offensive player. Part of that was they started to double Jason. But yeah, I don't think it's that crazy of a take to say Jaylen Brown has been the best player. Now, this whole thing about if he was the number one option, would he average 30 points a game and be an MVP? It's cute. He is averaging almost 30 points a game since All-Star, so maybe you can, if you squint, believe that one. But it's got to give you confidence as a Celtics fan going into this, but also hopefully it gives Jaylen Brown confidence, or at least the right amount of confidence. You could see that being like a problem in its own right. Alex, anything else about Jaylen since All-Star basically has been the story here?
I just really have to continue plugging what I think has been an exceptional defensive season from Jaylen Brown. I've been kind of on this all year. Jaylen is looking more and more like a guy who could conceivably crack an all-defense team. And what I found really interesting about Jaylen, and I keep coming back to the Nuggets game because the Nuggets game feels like a very visceral flashpoint for this season, is that the Celtics' most effective defensive angles in that game were when they put Jaylen Brown on Jokic. As far as an individual defender is concerned, he might be the Celtics' best, like, pure, I'm going to lock up my matchup guy. Derek White, Drew Holiday, Al Horford, of course, are all incredible defenders. I feel like Drew Holiday and Al Horford in particular primarily focus on full court team defense and just kind of mucking things up. And Derek White is, you know, an animal. Like, he does everything. So big props to him. I think he is a borderline lock at this point for all defense. But Jaylen's making a pretty darn good case for himself. And I think what's most exciting to me about his evolution on that end is that having a player who can potentially be like the main guy, like the guy to take on the main assignment in the playoffs, who also has the ability to create his own shot, is an extremely rare and challenging matchup for just about any postseason opponent. I think of like the guys who are able to create their own offense and also guard the other team's best player. That list is extremely short in NBA history, both in the current game and also just like broadly in NBA history. And that has me very, very excited about Jaylen heading into the postseason.
Yeah, I'll use that to connect to the lab portion of the programming, which is when Jaylen was coming into the league. I mean, I think the top line thing to look at for his candidacy was his athleticism. And I mean, we've talked about this so much in the podcast, but like, it's not just intellectually do you come of age when you're 27 or 28 in the NBA, but like physically, you're just like not a string bean anymore. I mean, we see players just like take a step forward, like what their final adult body looks like. And Jaylen this year is so strong. And Alex, to your point, guarding the best player takes a lot of energy. It's really hard, but it helps if you're really strong and you're well-conditioned and you know what you're doing. And he 100% has the bandwidth to go guard pretty actively the other team's best player and then turn around and not just be like an effective offensive piece, but still be a number one option when he needs to be. So, I mean, everything about like Jaylen being outrageously athletically gifted is like coming to fruition this season, I think. To say nothing, Justin, of your point of like the decision-making is better, the left-handed dribble, all of the little errors, it's all coming together. So that's a little bit about Jaylen's profile as a college player. So let's put on our safety goggles and let's hop into the Celtics lab and let's talk about the NCAA tournament and how it relates to the Boston Celtics, which means, Dr. Quinn, you're basically up here. We're going to start with, we'll do a little bit of history and nostalgia after, but we're going to start with what players, if any, the Celtics and the Celtics fans might want to look at. Right now, Boston is likely to pick just about last in the first round, 30th, and pretty deep into the second round. We've got the number 47 that we're going to use, but those are the ballparks. So we are not looking at the lottery, we don't think. We're not looking at the early second round. We're looking at the end of the first round, the end of the second round. But I believe Jokic was picked with the 46th pick. So that doesn't mean there's not value to find out there. So Justin,
New Phoenix Suns point guard Isaiah Thomas, I believe, was picked the last pick, so there can be value anywhere in the draft.
Oh yeah, shout out to IT. Big shout out to IT. Good for you. Okay, so Justin, first of all, tell the people your methodology, because I think it's honest and how most people approach the game. But second, break down your list.
I mean, I stole from the master, Brad Stevens himself. Did this player do really well against a team I care a lot about, which in this case is the UConn Huskies, as regular listeners know? The reason I'm doing this was because of an errant NCAA tournament moment. If Tate George and Scott Burrell had not connected on a 0.5 second shot in the, I think it was a 1989 NCAA tournament, then I probably wouldn't be doing this, or if I was, I wouldn't be doing it the way I'm doing it now, because that got me hooked on the sport. So with all that said, basically the bulk of the people who I scouted for this little segment we're doing here thread the needle of players I've actually seen, which, you know, kind of, you're going to recommend them, you want to at least watch a game of them. And one of them who I don't think the Celtics are going to draft, I would not be devastated. This person is not on the list because I recommend them. It's one of the most commonly mocked suggestions for the Celtics for the number 30 pick. I would not be happy if they used this pick on that particular player, just because of the fact that that's $2 million guaranteed money, even if it's number 30. And with the impact of the repeater tax that the Boston's going to be looking at, that's going to be really expensive, $2 million, like I think something like $8 or $9 or something like that, $1 million. Some ridiculous amount of money for a guy that not even sure is going to be playing at all in his first year. And that is Zach Edey of Purdue. The best comp I've heard of, not even a modern player, because there really isn't a modern player who's like him, would be Yao Ming. He is very similar in how he moves and how he plays. He's mobile, but not laterally, right? So he can crash to the basket. You can dump things off to him, and that's pretty much where his offensive utility ends. He's got a little bit of a jumper away from the basket, but it's not super reliable. He probably has a role in a second unit, matchup-dependent, kind of a big man situation, but that's the kind of guy that they should trade back to like number 33 and 38 or whatever we saw from Brad last year. So that way they don't have to hang on to him if he proves to be completely useless at this level, which he might. I don't think he will, but he's not going to be a star or even a rotation player, in my opinion.
There's a world in which Luke Kornet exceeds his price tag this offseason to the point where it doesn't make much sense to retain him. And if that is the case, you could definitely see Edey come in as that kind of fourth big. Brad Stevens loves to have a true lob threat. And, you know, just from what little I do know about Edey, he can catch a lob and put it down. I'm not sure he can do a whole lot other than that at this stage in the game. But having a vertical spacer is a pretty key component to Missoula's offense. So it wouldn't shock me if that's the direction they go if Kornet ends up leaving in free agency.
Can I levy a conspiracy theory?
Do it.
Is this the first year that the draft will be two nights?
Is it this year? I should know the answer to that, but I think it's going to be this year, but...
Yeah. Yeah, that's what my computer says. Okay. First of all, what a stupid idea. As someone who...
Whatever.
Last year I was there till like 1 a.m. I don't want to do that again. Second... My conspiracy is this, that Adam Silver will use all of his legal soft power to encourage some team to make some sort of mega trade to set up intrigue for the second night to sell the product. Because if this is the first year they do it and it's all chalk, there's no trades, there's no nothing. And then it's like, but tune in tomorrow for the second
round. For the boring part of the draft, yeah. No offense to people who are doing this.
Also,
it's not boring, but people will look at it that way.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's not boring insofar as like it changes people's lives, but it's boring insofar as it's a television program. And if the ratings for the first round are like more than 2x the second round, how can they justify doing it more than, I mean, money is the answer. But anyways.
That's what it's about. We all know what it is.
So as someone who is realizing in real time that I'm going to have to spend two beautiful nights in June watching a draft.
Hopefully about not till 1 a.m. If they screw that up, man, then
Well, that would be Zarin's call because he keeps trading picks. A summer night in Boston is a wonderful. I don't know. I'm having a meltdown. I don't want to cover the shot.
I feel you.
Okay, anyways. Oh, yeah, I have one more dumb thing. In reading your list, I just now realized that this person's name is not Daron Holmes Dayton. It's Daron Holmes, and he plays for Dayton. I am a dum-dum. Anyways, tell us about Daron Holmes, who plays for Dayton.
He was from Dayton. Daron Holmes, he's kind of like, if you could lose a little bit of the best of both of them, or Horford's case a lot of it, Al Horford, in terms of his technical skill, right? He's a more skilled, he's not a big lumbering big, but he is an offensive rebound machine in kind of the same way that Nemi is, right? So if you could combine those two characters, that would give you a general idea. He's more of a forward, but he's stout enough to play the five as well. He's got a 7-foot wingspan. He can, you know, protect the rim, 38.5% from three. He would be a very good option, in my opinion, if they do stay in the first round. I think he's mocked a little bit higher than where Boston's picking, but, you know, players slip all the time, so he's definitely not out of range. And then the other person I think that would be interesting for Boston, who is regularly mocked in that area, not really a position of need because he's a pure point guard, but he's a pure point guard. He's one of the, he's like a Bob Cousy-esque kind of, just like, we'll find dimes anywhere. That's Tyler Kolek of Marquette. He didn't do all that great when he played the Huskies, but he is a very popular player on draft boards, and I can see the vision. I don't think that the Celtics would take him, but of the people who are in the range of the first round, there's not a lot of particularly good fits for Boston in that range, so I think at that point you're just looking for talent upside. And then we jump to the second round.
Can I just remember this point guard kid? The two things that jump off the page for me are that he's 23, so he'd be older. It'd be kind of like Pritchard. Like, exactly. There's a little more maturity or experience.
No projects on the list, exactly.
And this is mean. This is not the point of this episode. I don't know how much longer Boston needs to work on JD Davison, and if they want to. I mean, the dollars don't add up, and the tax bill is a real thing. But if they wanted to have a 15th man be a point guard, and they think, you know what, JD Davison is just like doesn't have it, that could be interesting. So. Having just learned about this person, that's where my mind went. Okay, tell us about the second round.
Okay, so Harrison Ingram of North Carolina, 21 years old, 6'7". He, not the best three-point shot out there, but if you squint really hard, you can see shades of Sam Hauser. There's another better Sam Hauser clone, shall we say. When Sam Hauser becomes too expensive, because, I mean, you don't hit 10 three-pointers in the game and get ignored in this NBA anymore. And the man can defend, contrary to his reputation coming into the league as this other person I will talk about shortly. So you'll notice all three of the people I found in Boston's range for this round are all 3-and-D guards. It's weird to me that 3-and-D guards are so heavily populated in mock drafts in this general range. But big men are experiencing something, or skilled big men, I should say, are experiencing something of a resurgence in the NBA, which is probably partially explaining that. Baylor Shireman, I hope I'm saying his name correct, out of Creighton, 23 years old, also 6'7", 40% three-point shooter, 9 rebounds per game, very good rebounder for his position. And my heart, my soul, Alex Caravan out of UConn. He's an excellent defender. He gets nearly a steal in the block per game. And he's closer to a career 40%. He's doing a little bit worse this year at 39.5%. Not scoring very much at UConn this season, but he's not asked to be doing as much. They have a very stacked team, so his role is reduced. On a team that is, in a lot of ways, like the Celtics, in which they can play a lot of different ways, but we can talk more about them later.
Are Ray Allen and Kemba Walker the only UConn alum to play for the Celtics?
No, there have been at least one or two others. I'm trying to think who off the top of my head. One person from like way back in the 60s, if I remember correctly. No, that's no. They might be, actually, now that I think about it.
I don't know. Other than Justin Champagne, I can't think of a Panther. I'm sure there's someone, but I don't know. Speaking of which, just
Steven Adams
didn't play for the Celtics.
No. Oh, for the Celtics. I thought you meant in the NBA.
I mean, he's got DeJuan Blair. I mean, it's a really rich and storied program. Anyways,
he should be in the tournament this year.
I don't know.
That'd be nice.
I feel like they invite 68 teams, and if you didn't make the cut, you probably didn't deserve it. Like, they give you every.
I think St. John's didn't. I mean, St. John's had an excellent profile. The biggest thing going against it, and this is a pretty big thing, Rick Pitino was coaching them. I think him dumping on his own team.
Oh, I like that for conspiracy. Case.
But, hey. Listen, I'm just going to go out and say that on a Celtics podcast, I'm not sure that Rick Pitino defense squad is going to get us a lot of love from the listeners.
No, if anything, I think we just...
I'm blaming Rick Pitino.
Yeah, exactly.
So the St. John's players may have deserved to get in, but never.
Well, speaking of Celtics fans, if you are a Celtics fan without a vested interest in this tournament, but you feel like you're going to watch or fill in a bracket, Justin just said to keep an eye on Purdue, Dayton, UNC, Creighton, and UConn. And I'm sure Justin will write about his players eventually, so check out the Celtics Wire. You can also root for UConn if you like Justin. You can root – I don't know if Pitt is doing the – you can root for UVM, actually. I went to Vermont for a year. I can own that. So if you like me, you can root for Vermont. If you like Sam Hauser, you can root for Marquette. If you like Jaden Springer, you can root for Tennessee. If you like – Tatum, you can root for Duke, obviously. I am learning right now that Svi Mykhailiuk went to Kansas, JD Davis to Alabama. Both those teams are 4 seeds. Big Al very famously went to Florida, which we will talk about.
As did Justin.
Oh, yo, you got two dogs in this fight, huh?
Yeah, it was really awkward when I was in grad school and the Huskies were being the pants off the Gators. That was not popular.
Yeah, that sounds familiar, doesn't it? I don't think I knew that Florida was in the bracket. What's the closest to a matchup they could get in the Final Four? They're both on the left side of the bracket, Florida and
UConn. You know, I have not looked at the actual bracket enough to give you any kind of intelligent response. I think they're seeded fairly low. Yeah, 7 seed. So not super high. I don't think they have great odds, but they should at least make it out of the first round.
All right. Well, if you like Justin Hort or Big Al, you can root for Florida. I'm also learning that Nemish Gato went to Utah State, so you can root for them. Xavier went to Sparty, Michigan State. Derek White, I think, has made it clear that he went to Colorado. Sam Hauser went
to... Sam gets two.
Virginia. Oh, wait, I got this. Sam Hauser went to Virginia, and then he transferred to Marquette.
Yeah, other way, but yeah.
But those are the schools.
Yep.
That's pretty good. Last night, or on Thursday night, Tatum went 12 for 12 naming where his teammates went to college. It's Justin, you and I were talking about blind spots we have in our NBA coverage. It's so important to people who like hoops, and I'm not into it. I don't know. Also, Fast PP went to Oregon. You can root for them. And then
can't hear
Jordan Walsh, Jalen Brown, Drew Peterson. It was nice. Can't hear me.
Yes, we hear you now.
Can you hear me now?
We hear you now.
Oh, it's just a pregnant pause to tell you about the teams that didn't make the tournament. It doesn't matter. They're not in the tournament. Screw them. Okay.
Gotta give my shout out. I gotta give my shout out to my boy Luke Cornett out of Vandy.
Why? They didn't make the team. I mean, the thing.
Because I loosely flirted with being a Vanderbilt basketball fan at one point, and I love Luke Cornett.
I love Luke Cornett too, but Vanderbilt isn't dancing, so screw them. Sorry. What are they? The Commodores?
Yes.
Right. Wow. Anyways, the Athens of the South, Nashville. How's that? Okay. Any other thoughts on the tournament? On
Eddie House has a tournament in Jalen in New Mexico.
Spelled a different way. J-A-L-I-N. Is that what the note said?
J-A-E-L-I-N. Yeah.
What a versatile name Jalen is. You can spell it so many ways. Eddie has made it a big deal that he is rooting for his son there. So if you want to root for Eddie House or Jalen House, New Mexico is, what are they, the Lobos?
I think that's the other one. I could be wrong.
It sounds good.
JR Giddens will yell at me if I get it wrong, though, so I'm sorry, JR.
All right, let's do this. Let me do my post-roll, and then we'll each share our favorite Celtics-related tournament memory and wax poetic about that to get out of here, and also dibs on the one that I wrote. Okay, let me remind you that the Celtics Lab podcast is brought to you by Prize Picks, the exclusive fantasy basketball partner of the CLNS Media Network. Go ahead and sign up with the promo code CLNS to get in on the action. It'll help us out a lot. Like and subscribe to this podcast. That will help us out a lot too. And if you enjoyed this pod, check out the How About Them Celtics podcast, First to the Floor, and the many other New England sports podcasts available on the CLNS Media Network. All right, Alex, you go first. Favorite Celtics-ish related tournament memory?
I'm going to just preface this by saying that I am not a tremendous college basketball follower, but I got to give a shout out to my boy Luke Kornet, who had two very good seasons at the end of his Vanderbilt tenure that resulted in Vanderbilt making the NCAA tournament, which, if you know Vanderbilt basketball, is a massive, massive, massive deal for Vandy. They were, of course, eliminated in the first round. That was not surprising to anybody. That is what Vanderbilt basketball does. But the fact that Luke Kornet carried Vanderbilt to the NCAA tournament, not once, but twice in his junior and senior seasons, respectively, is like one of the great accomplishments in college basketball history in my mind. So big ups to Luke Kornet.
And he's a massive man, so that works too. It's thematic. Dr. Quinn, your favorite memory.
So mine's going to be predictable, but I will say that Al Horford's back-to-back titles were...
I said dibs. You can't do that.
I'm not taking them.
Okay. And now you're going to do the UConn over Pitt one.
I'm not taking it. Don't worry.
I know, but the one that you are taking is also a pain in my side.
Well, it lingered. All I wanted to say is it lingered in the collective consciousness of my time at the University of Florida in the same kind of a way that we have been accused of letting the 08 title linger as Celtics fans. People are still celebrating those dual titles to this day in Gainesville, as they should. But for me, there has never been a more impressive, more Cinderella, honestly, if we're being completely honest with the quality of the team that was behind Kemba Walker. They should not have beaten Pitt. They should not have beaten most of the teams that were on their way to a national title. The fact that Kemba just found a way to will his team, he literally put them on his back. I mean, don't get me wrong, Nils Giffey and a host of other people definitely helped him out. But that was just a magical, magical tournament run. And if you really subscribe to the one win or you go home philosophy of being a meaningful way to define excellence, which there's a good debate it is not, but just for the excitement of it, I really don't think, for me at least, there has ever been a better tournament run of any sort.
He traveled. Kemba traveled on that shot over Gary McGee. I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm not arguing with you.
I guess I'll shout out two things that I don't really have ownership of. I recently learned that, well, so I knew Joe Mazzulla's West Virginia Mountaineers upset John Wall and Boogie Cousins in the tournament in 2010. What I recently learned is that it was Joe Mazzulla that said, hey, we got to go to a 1-3-1 zone here. And I posted a clip on my Twitter if you want to see his hilarious post-game interview. But he guarded Boogie Cousins in that 1-3-1 and like shut Boogie down. And Boogie has a lot of size on Joe Mazzulla. So as someone who's watched Joe Mazzulla play pickup and it looks almost like an MMA match, I guess I can understand that. But it's still like a remarkable storyline and also pretty embarrassing for Boogie Cousins, John Wall, and Kentucky. Yeah, I don't really watch college hoops, but as a person of a certain age who used to watch SportsCenter every morning, I do feel like those Florida teams have so much mythology around them. It is worth pointing out that the last time that the men's NCAA tournament had a back-to-back tournament champ was the Florida Gators. So until, is it UConn has a chance to do that?
They could do it this year. We have the pleasure of being the only school besides Duke to win men's and women's in the same year, but we've never won back-to-back.
Right. So in the men's tournament, Florida's still the reigning champs. So yeah, first of all, those teams rock. I love Corey Brewer, one of my favorite NBA players of all time. And Al Horford does the Gator Chop during every Celtics intro, so it's still with us. So I'll close with that one because it's like the most real to me. I get to see Al Horford do the Gator thing every day. I guess Tatum friggin' loves Duke, so that's pretty in my face too. Anyways, I hope people enjoy the tournament. I hope they use Prize Picks to get in on the action and use the promo code CLNS. I hope everyone's favorite team wins, but I don't think that's allowed, so I don't know what's going to happen. We will be back next week to talk about the Boston Celtics and not the college kids, but who knows? A lot can happen between now and then. Until then, like and subscribe to our podcast. Check out the Celtics Wire. Check out the Divine Sweater. And we'll see you later, Alex. We'll catch you later. That was it. I said the buzzword.